We're on the third part of the patience chapter of the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And last week, I want to go over last week, which I think was one of the most important classes. The main question last week was where, you know, if you take all the things that make you irritated, like a humid room, or traffic, or pollution, or anything unpleasant, if you take all the things that upset you, people at work are very typical. Somebody in your family or somebody you live with on a bad day, your own body, you know, when your own body is acting bad and your body hurts, you know, some part of your body is hurt. All the things that make you upset, even your own mind when you're not happy and you feel discouraged or you feel depressed or something like that. All of those objects, if you take them all together and you put them all in one big circus, right? And you wonder, you try to examine where did these objects come from? You know, where did they come from? And then people say, oh, the guy at work, he comes from, because the boss hired this guy. And the boss made a mistake and he shouldn't have hired this guy. And if he'd hired a person who was a little more intelligent, I wouldn't have to put up with this person right now. You know what I mean? But we're talking, where did he come from in the first place? You know, why did he exist on this planet? I mean, you probably ask this question about certain people in your life, you know. Why did this person ever come to exist on this planet, you know? And of all the people in the world, you know, I don't know, 3 billion or 4 billion or something, why did he run into me, you know? And why are we working in the same office, you know? And why does he have to be in my room, you know? And why does he have to be right next to me? And why does he have to be my supervisor or something like that? You know, and so these questions come in your mind. And that's what Master Shantideva, I think last week, of all the classes in this course, I think last week was the most important. Where did he come from? And we talked about children asking their mother, you know, two people are in a car. The car gets in an accident. One of the people dies. The other person just walks away from the accident. And the kid goes to the mother and says, you know, why did my friend Johnny die, you know, and his mom didn't get hurt at all. And mom says, well, he got hit, the car got in an accident, you know, and then the kid says, yeah, but the mother walked away and my friend got killed, you know. And your mother says, well, he was sitting on the wrong side of the car and when it hit the other car, then that's where the other car hit. And he went through the windshield and his mother didn't and he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. And then the kid says, well, why did the car hit their car on that side? And why was Johnny sitting on that side and he wasn't sitting on the other side? And why was the mother sitting on the other side? And at that point, your parents just say, don't worry about it. You know, there's no answer to these questions. You know, he just got into that side. He just forgot to put on his seatbelt. And there's no answer to your question. Which is really unscientific and really against the Western ideas, you know. There should be a reason for everything. There should be a reason why he got in that side of the car and why the other car hit the car on that side of the car. And these things, the most important things in your life, which means why did that side of the car get hit and why did he get into that side of the car? Those are the most important questions of your life. And it seems like at the crucial moment, that the Western explanation breaks down. You know, they say, don't worry about it. Don't ask these questions anymore. There's no reason for that. But that doesn't fit what we believe. We believe there's a reason for everything. There must be a reason why he got in that side of the car. There must be a reason why the other car hit that side of the car. And that's what we're talking about. That was the subject of last week's class. Where do those things come from? Where did that guy come from in your life? And I don't mean, you know, he was born in such and such a hospital in Kansas and the birth certificate has such and such a date and a time. That's not the question. Why was he born there? Why did he come to New York City? Why did he choose as his career the very same career that you did? You know, why did he show up in the office 6 months before you and then get to be your supervisor? You know, why? You know, and this is the question that Master Shantideva asks. He says, take all the objects that make you angry. Take all the objects that make you irritated. You know, why was the northbound FDR full of traffic when you got on it, but the southbound was clear? But you're on the northbound. Why? You know, why is the northbound crowded right now? And they say, well, there was an accident. But why wasn't the accident on the southbound? And why am I on the northbound and I'm not on the southbound? You know, they say, but you're going uptown. They say, yeah, but why am I going uptown right now? I'm not going downtown right now. And there's got to be an answer to all those questions. Who made those things? Where did they come from? And we get in the habit of saying, there's no cause. There's no reason. It just happened. There was an accident on the northbound today. But there's a reason for everything. Everything exists. Everything was created by something. So then you've got to go into all the possible explanations. First one is, it's just an accident. There's no reason. There's no real reason. All those people in your life, all those bad things that happen to you, all those hot rooms that you have to be in, they just happen. There's no reason. That's possibility number one. The old schools that we talked about in India were saying to Master Shantideva, God made them. You know, God made that traffic accident. God told the kid to get on the right side of the car. God told the other car to hit the right side of the car. God made the kid with a body that would break in the first place. And God killed the kid. And that's one possible answer, you know. Then there's another one, you know, there was this big bang at the beginning of time. And there was no, before that, there wasn't anything that existed. Nothing existed. And everything was just empty. And then suddenly there was this explosion that wasn't caused by anything. And then time started and space started. And we're still moving, you know, like it's a big thing, you know, like it's still expanding. Space is still expanding. And it must have come from this causeless event that was triggered by nothing. Okay? And that's another, or it was triggered by a big bang before it. And that universe expanded and then shrank, and then there was another big bang and started this universe, you know. And either it didn't have a cause, or it was the last big bang, or there was a big bang before that, or something like that. But that's about it. That's about all the explanations you get. I don't think I missed any, really. Either God did it, it didn't have a cause, it was a big bang that did have a cause or didn't have a cause, or maybe there was a big bang before. There wasn't a big bang before, and maybe it had a start, or maybe not. And how big was the first particle? You know, but those are all the choices that you get in this world for why this guy showed up in your company and became your supervisor. Why this particular guy? Okay? And Master Shantideva goes through all those arguments, and the one that it doesn't have any cause is ridiculous. Okay? Anything that began, and anything there where there's an event where something happens and somebody moves, like your arm moves, or the traffic moves or doesn't move, or there is a supervisor at your work. Everything that has an event tied to it had a cause. Must have a cause. If there's some kind of event happening and somebody's moving, something's changing, there must be a cause for it. Throw out the first one. Okay, what's his total arguments for God? They're so simple. They're so simple and they're so obvious that if you gave them to a normal Western person, they'd say you're being silly. But really those three... The God is silly. That idea is silly. Okay? First of all, they say he made everything. Okay? So Shantideva says, well, who made him? Because they had to be there before he made everything. So did he make them? Or somebody made him? Somebody else made him. And then he goes through all the arguments. You know, I mean, nobody else made him because nobody else existed yet. And he didn't make himself because he didn't exist yet. So it's crazy. It's just crazy. It doesn't make any sense at all. Who made the world? He did. He's eternal and unchanging, and he made the world. Did he have to do anything? You know, and Shantideva is not a fool. He doesn't say, oh, he had to stoop down and get some clay and, you know, do like that. He says, at the very least, you have to agree that he would have had to have some intention. His mind would have had to move. He would have had to say what? I think I'll make something today. You know, that's a thought. That's a change. Before he didn't have the thought, and then he had the thought. That's called changing. So he's not unchanging. He can't make the world unless he changes. He can't even think to make the world unless he changes. So Shantideva says, forget it. You know, then there's the compassion argument. I mean, that's not in Master Shantideva. To me, that's just common sense. You know, if a being made the world, then why would he make that guy to irritate you? And if it's to test you, why didn't he make you untested? Why didn't he make you perfectly patient before? So you didn't have to get tested. You know? I mean, if he had a choice from the beginning of time, by the way, he has to make all creation at once, right? So he could have just made you perfect to start with, and then he wouldn't have to go through all this suffering. And the suffering is no joke. You know, it's not like some pleasant minor test that your boss gives you or something. This is serious suffering. This is people dying of AIDS, people dying of cancer, people going through horrible, horrible sufferings throughout their life, depression, all kinds of mental sufferings. It's not a joke. I mean, if he wants to test people, just do it in the first moment of time, Master Shantideva says. Why string it out? Why drag it out over thousands and millions of years? You know, if you're going to test somebody and you can create them and destroy them in a millisecond, we'll get it over with at the beginning. It's almost like sadistic to torture these people for a whole lifetime. If you're going to test somebody, wait till they're like 25 years old, give them a nice good test for 6 weeks or for a week or something, and get it over with. You know, because you're perfect and you can create them and you can make them any way you want. You can even decide how the test is going to come out. So it just doesn't make sense. It just flatly doesn't make sense. And then this being is supposed to be aware of everything, but he doesn't change. So when he's aware of you, and then he's aware of you, he changes. And when you change, his awareness of you changes. So he's not unchanging. So it just doesn't make sense. The idea that there's some being who knows everything, cares for you, and never changes is crazy. The idea that he made everything, but nobody made him, is crazy. The idea that he did everything, but never moves, is crazy. Unless you just want to be illogical, then you can say anything. You know, in debate we say, Kung Ten Ten, you know? Kung Ten Ten. You get to a point with some guy and he just breaks all the rules of logic, you know? He says, well, this is a special case, you know? He can do anything he wants. Then you say, you know, Kung Ten Ten means, okay, anything you say, you know? You can't debate with you, you know? Anything you say is okay. Just say anything you want. Because if you don't have to be logical, you can say the opposite, you can say the contradictions, you can say anything. So Shantideva, Master Shantideva, he gives those arguments. And I think it's very important. I think it's very important that when someone pisses you off, you have to focus on that being and say, where did this being come from? You must think like that. You know, it's essential to focus on that being that makes you angry, or that situation, or that traffic jam, or that illness in your own body, or your own depression, and say, where did this come from? You know, and then go through all those possibilities. Did it come from nowhere? You know, was it made by some sadistic guy? You know, is it an accident? Was there a big bang some point? Or is it maybe my past ways of thinking? And this is all a perception caused by my past ways of thinking. Which if you gave me five choices, and if you were an Eskimo and came in here and didn't have any theories about where the world came from, and they explained those five, you would go for number five. Trust me. You know, if you were really objective and you hadn't grown up with all these myths and fairy tales, you would automatically choose number five. You'd say, that makes the most sense by far. It sounds okay. Maybe I can't confirm it right now directly. But if you give me those five choices, I mean, number five sounds like it makes the most sense. And it does make the most sense. Okay. And it also allows you to do something about it. And that's the main thing. The other four, you're stuck. You know, the other four, you can just go home and suffer. You know, wait for the nursing home people to come. Or wait for the cancer ward people to pick you up, you know. And that's it. There's nothing else to do. You don't have to do anything else, because you're just going to suffer. If that's where everything came from, it's hopeless. And the people who commit suicide are correct. You know, if that's where it came from, then there's nothing you can do. And that's why number five is... Then he gets into the reasoning for number five. We're going to talk more about number five by implication today. So we'll have seven contemplations today. I got called into work by my diamond dealing boss after 3 months or something, and I couldn't finish the translation. So you're just going to get them. So you got to pay more attention than usual today, because you don't get the reading till next week. All right. We finished about half of it. All the verses are finished. So Hector's going to read the first contemplation.
Contemplation 13. What harm can words really do to us? The mind is not a thing with a body, so couldn't be overcome by anyone at any point at all. It's due to the fact that we grasp to it that all these many pains can do harm to the body. When someone criticizes me or says some harsh things to me, their words, with their unpleasant sound, can do no physical harm to me. Why is it then, mind, that you feel such fury?
I was going to call this contemplation sticks and stones, because that's what it boils down to. Sticks and stones can break my bones. There's a laundromat on 2nd Avenue between 5th and 6th on the west side. And they have that famous quotation in there. Somebody told me it's Martin Buber. I don't know for sure. And it says, what is it? God grant me the serenity to accept those things which I can't change, the courage to change those things which I can't change, and the wisdom to know the difference, which is kind of like Kelte Chusa Yunani, which you memorized so nicely and then the quiz wasn't here. But the one in the laundromat says, and the wisdom to hide the bodies of all the people who pissed me off and I murdered them. Okay, never mind. Okay. Say, Yini, Lu Jian, Mayim Pei, Su Kiang, Kang Duang, Shou Min Nu. Okay. Yi means mind. There are many, many words in Buddhism for mind. In Tibetan, there are many, many words for mind. I studied Russian, and there were in college, and there were 25 words for foggy, dark, unpleasant, gloomy. Gloomy words. There's 20 words for gloomy. And I was struck when I first started to study Tibetan that there were 20 different words for the mind and different kinds of the mind. Okay, Yi means mind. Ni is a filler. The mind. Lu Chen means has a body. Has a body. Mayin means it doesn't. It is not. Okay? So the mind is not something which has a physical body. Okay? Bei means and therefore. Okay? The mind doesn't have a body. And therefore, Su Kiang means by anyone at all. By anybody. Su means anybody, and Su Kiang means by anybody at all. Kan Duan means anywhere at all, no matter where. Shou Min Nu means couldn't overcome it, could not overcome it, okay? Couldn't hurt it, couldn't destroy it. Okay, what does that mean? And Geltab Jay, in his commentary, makes it clear. But what he's saying is, he's specifically talking about when someone attacks you verbally. Okay? When someone attacks you in their words. And he gives the example of tsigzup, which is harsh words. And then he gives the example of criticizing you in some way. So when someone criticizes you, or says something very harsh to you, and by the way, this whole lesson is going to be concentrating on things that make you angry. You know, things that could make you angry. He's starting out with someone else attacking you verbally, saying something harsh to you, like someone just comes up to you and says, my boss did it today. It was he was comparing me to a former employee who was on the phone all the time. Personal phone calls, you know. And he I got angry, you know, because he's comparing me to this guy, a really bad guy, you know. Or someone who criticizes you in another way, okay. But what he's trying to point out is that the mind does not have a body. The mind is not like the physical body. Someone can say something to you which is very rough. Someone can even attack you physically. You know, someone can hit you, someone can cut you. But if you think about it, the mind and the body in this sense are independent. And because the mind does not have a body, words in particular, there's no reason why it should upset you. Okay? It's not like the body. I mean, if the body gets cut with a knife, it bleeds and it hurts, okay? But the mind is independent in a sense. If you could train yourself well enough in patience, then words don't have any... Your mind doesn't have any physical form. If you were in Boston last weekend, we talked about it a lot. And I like just to go like that, you know. The body is something physical. The body is something that if you hit it, it hurts and it's... It's made of this kind of stuff. The mind is invisible. The mind cannot be weighed. The mind cannot be cut. The mind is ineffable. You can't touch someone's mind. You can't see anybody's mind. According to Buddhism, you could put an atomic bomb next to a person, and when it blew up, the mind would just be sitting there as it was before. The body would be melted and vaporized, but the person's mind would just be there. It would not be hurt by that at all. The mind cannot be hurt. So he says, why should you get angry when people say something to you? Why? You know, it's not like your mind has a body. It's not like your mind is like this. If somebody punches you or breaks a rib, that's one thing. But when they say something to you or do something to you, why should you get upset? It's not as if your mind has a body. Okay? And that's his argument. It sounds like simple. It sounds kind of stupid. It sounds like, okay, how's that going to help me at work? But if you think about it, and if you meditate on patience, if you get used to patience, then you'll be able to overcome anger. Just by thinking, he's attacking me with physical objects called words. But my mind is like, cannot be touched by another person unless I allow it to be. Okay, that's the point. Your mind cannot be touched by anyone else unless you decide to allow it to be. Then in the next two lines, the person comes says to Master Shantideva, I understand that. You know, I understand when somebody yells at me or somebody cuts me or hurts me physically. I understand that my mind is not hurt. But I identify with my body. You know, when I see someone attack this particular meat, you know, when I see someone attack these particular hairs and freckles, because I've been with them so long, I get mad. You know, and then Master Shantideva says, but if you think about it, that's just a matter of choice. You know, whether you want to identify with this body is a matter of choice. You know, you don't have to. You know, you could, your mind doesn't have to be upset when the body is hurt. And you remember the example he gave last time. There's even people who, when they get hurt physically, their mind gets even stronger. There's even people who take pleasure in that, right? Getting hurt. I mean, that proves that it's a mental thing. You know, that proves that it's a matter of choice. Whether or not you get upset about it. He's not saying whether or not it hurts, okay? If it hurts, it hurts. And hurting is a sensation. But how upset you choose to get about it, and whether you choose to get angry about it, is a matter of choice. You have that choice. At any given time, you are completely independent, you know? And I find myself that I get more influenced by my friends than by my boss, you know? Like if my friends start to get angry, if the people I'm going out with to a coffee shop, if one of them has what we call a mental affliction attack, like a klesha attack, and they're like jealous at that moment, or they're upset, or they didn't get enough sleep last night, and if they're already depressed, or if they're already in a bad mood, it affects me more than my boss. You know, my boss is attacking me. And so I recognize the attack. And when you recognize the attack, it's a lot easier to be patient. Because you sit there and say, this is an attack on my patience. I'm a Buddhist. I'm not going to allow it to upset me, you know. But when your friends are kind of down or upset and you're around them and you're close to them, it sort of infects you secretly. It's a sneak attack, you know. And then they can bring you down. They can start to make you unhappy. You know, if you're close to somebody, and then they're unhappy for like half an hour close to you. It's really hard to maintain your joy, right? There's this joke. Somebody said last week, somebody from ACI was grumpy, you know, and somebody came up to them and said, hey, you all right? And they said, don't bother me. I'm maintaining my joy, you know. I'm not getting upset, you know. So I think you have to be more careful about that. You know, the obvious attacks when your boss is actually screaming in your face or your wife or whatever is screaming at you, that's obvious. I think, for me, it's more subtle. It's when someone close to me or I'm with somebody and they're down, they're depressed or they're feeling a little bit angry or jealous or something like that. And to me, that's much more insidious, you know, that's much more dangerous. And you have to maintain your joy. It's democratic. You have a choice. You always have a choice. You know, there's no... Because the mind does not have a body, yini luchen mayim pe, because the mind has a body, you are completely independent of what's happening outside of you. You know, if you think about it, at any given time, you have a choice whether to get angry or not. You have a choice whether to get upset or depressed or not. Because the mind is not physical. The mind is not something physical. So whether you choose to relate to everything that's happening around you and get negative is totally a matter of choice. It's not at all to do with the outside world. It's a matter of you deciding, are you going to allow yourself to be upset or angry right now? and you're just independent. And get used to that thinking. Get used to that way of thinking. You know, whether you're unhappy or not is totally up to you. It's completely up to you. You can divorce yourself from the outside circumstances. Why? Yini luchen mayempe. Because the mind is not physical. So you can disassociate with those things, even with the people around you. And it's a very delicate thing, and you have to learn to do it. Okay? Did you have a question, Hector? Okay. Hector says, if everything is ultimately determined by your past actions, in your past life or even earlier in this life, then when you, Michael Roach, say at every given point you have a choice, how does that tie together? And actually, whether you make the choice is up to your past karma. It's true. Okay? Whether you're able to make the choice is largely determined by your past karma. If you continue to be bad, then the odds that you'll be able to choose to maintain your joy are very bad. You probably won't be able to. So where do you change? How can you change? Very difficult. They say in Buddhism that the downward cycle is very, very powerful. And once you get into a downward cycle, it's very, very difficult to break out. And people say, well, that doesn't seem fair, you know. Like they complain about God, you know. They say, God doesn't seem to be fair. You know, why does he pick on these kids? Why do kids get AIDS? It doesn't seem to be fair. Forget fairness in Buddhism. You know, forget it. There's nobody in charge. It's your karma. It's totally what you did. And that's, oh, the justice is meted out very cruelly and mercilessly. If you did something and you don't purify it with the four powers, you must undergo that karma. And there's nobody around like some big guy with a white beard that can say, oh, let's make an exception in Michael Roach's case, you know. He's having a bad day. Let's just cancel that karma for the rest of today. No such thing. Karma is merciless. And karma is, chusumen means it never goes away. Nothing is lost. Karma is a total ecology of energy. You know, once you set it in motion, there's not the slightest amount of energy which is ever lost. Once you do a karma, it is recorded indelibly, unless you do the four opponent forces. It's recorded, and it will have its result. And no one can say, oh, Hector, I know you had a bad day. Let's just cancel that karma for the rest of the day. Or, you know, it's not really fair that because of your past karma, you won't be able to understand this teaching. And you'll go home and get as mad as you did yesterday. And you'll get even worse and worse and worse. You know, it doesn't seem fair. But that's exactly how karma works. The converse of that is that if you get the chance to break out the tiniest bit, you have to go for it. You know, people say, I can allow myself 5 minutes of anger. It's not so bad. I'm getting better. You know, I only get mad at my wife now for like 20 minutes a day. It used to be an hour a day. I used to get irritated with my kids every day when I got home. And now it's every other day. So I'm really improving, you know. I really deserve some points. But in Buddhism, it doesn't work that way. You don't get credit for being better than you were last week. Every bad karma you do, if it's only 5 minutes, will have its effect. There's no... you have to stop smoking in one day. You know, there's no credit for like cutting down to 3 cigarettes and then 1 cigarette. And any moment of bad karma, meaning anger, that you allow yourself to have, well, you will suffer from it. So you just have to... You have to really get into that mood. And if you have a tiny chance to do a good deed, if you have a chance to make your anger 1 minute less, then go for it. You know, if you have a chance to remove your irritation about a spot on your shoe, go for it. Take the chance. Take the opportunity. Because that puts you on an upward cycle. You know, if you have a chance to do a tiny, tiny good deed, don't waste it. Go for it. You know, like you have a chance to offer a flower or something, or something stupid little thing, like an ice cube or something. Go for it. Do it. Because it's those tiny things that help you break out of a downward cycle later. It's those tiny bokchaks, they're called, that allow you to break out later. You should never waste the smallest opportunity to do a good deed. Okay. Even if it seems irrelevant or too small to be important, do it, you know. Yeah, otherwise there would be something happening outside the laws of karma, which is impossible. I mean, frankly, you're absolutely right. And the feeling you're having right now of, gee, how could I ever get out of this, is totally accurate. And the odds against it are fantastic. You know, for a person to really change in this life is extremely difficult. And is it all caused by your past deeds? Absolutely. You know, and it's very hard. You know, the odds of becoming a human, by the way, the odds of us remaining a human are over 1 billion to 1 against us. Over 1 billion to 1, easily over 1 billion to 1, okay, according to every Buddhist scripture, because of this fact, because karma is so merciless, and we're collecting it so quickly, it's extremely difficult, extremely difficult, yeah. She asked me, suppose you're having a long-term relationship with somebody, and it's going well, and then in general you don't get angry with each other, but there are some irritations or some feelings rising, and there's a point you reach at which if you don't vent some energy, she called it venting energy rather than getting angry, okay? If you don't vent some energy, that it would actually get worse, you know? And I've had this question many times in class. If the venting energy is a negative emotion, you must suffer from it, period. Oh, if it's not causing suffering to anyone, it's not a bad deed. Generally. But we have to include yourself. Like, I mean, there's bad deeds you can do in private of your own, privacy of your own room, lock the door, do the bad deed, nobody ever knows. But if it hurts you, that qualifies as a bad deed. What are those deeds? You have to study the 16 volumes of Vinaya. Seriously, 16,000 pages the Buddha spent describing the connection between certain deeds which seem innocent and they're very bad karmic results, and other deeds that might even seem evil that have very good results, depending on your motivation and depending on the nature of the deed. So that takes, for that you have to study karma, and seriously you have to study karma, because a human being, as opposed to an enlightened being, cannot see the connection between those things. It looks like this is a nice, innocent thing to do, but it's actually karmically very dangerous for you. But you have to study those things, okay? So, but the main point I wanted to make was, it's tiny, positive, karmic seeds which allow you at any time to break out of a cycle. And so, practically speaking, which is Master Shantideva's shtick, right? Practically speaking, what to do? Every chance you get to do even a tiny good deed, go for it. You know, even if it doesn't seem very important, you know. For example, just being happy about somebody else's good qualities. It takes like 10 seconds to enjoy someone else's virtues. That's a tremendous good karma. You know, like if you lay down on your bed, Lama Yeshe used to say, if you had a bad day at work, you went through a lot of traffic, you came home, you laid down on your... He says, you can't sit down and meditate, forget it. Your mind's going to be all jumbled up. Go ahead and try, it doesn't work. He said, go down, make an iced tea or a coffee, lay down on your couch and think about bodhicitta, you know, think about love. Just fantasize about love for 5 minutes. He said, don't waste your time. And that's very powerful. And that's how you get out of those cycles. I like the next verse very much. To me, the next verse is one of the most important in the whole Bodhisattva Charvatara. So close your eyes. Don't fall asleep.
Contemplation 14. What to do if someone tries to hurt the teaching or a teacher? It is completely wrong for me to feel anger even at those who speak against or try to destroy sacred images, shrines, or else the holy Dharma, since Buddhas and such cannot be hurt. And even too, when harm is done to lamas or relatives or the like, and those who are our friends, turn back your anger by seeing the fact that, as the way before, it all comes from causes.
Okay, there's actually two separate meditations here. There's two separate things. I mean, we're talking about, I think, I think this is some lines that you can be very proud about if you're a Buddhist, you know. Some of the most terrible suffering in the world history has been due to the struggles between different religions, you know. I can remember recently I was in India. In the last 3 or 4 years, there was a temple that, I'm not going to mention which religions because it doesn't matter. Religion number A had built this temple on this holy site. Religion B thought that this was a very sacred site and they wanted to build a temple. But religion A's temple has been there for 500 years. And it looks like that temple was built on the ruins of religion B's older temple that got destroyed so that religion A could build their temple there. So now religion B, I'm getting confused, but anyway, religion B is getting more powerful in India nowadays. And they got strong enough to go and occupy the temple. So then religion A went to the government and said, please help us, you know, religion B is occupying our temple. But unfortunately, the government right now is in support of religion A. So they just stalled. In the meantime, the followers of religion A dismantled the temple brick by brick, while the army stood around with guns and pointed them at them. And then it looked like there might be fighting. And then finally, the religion A followers got the whole temple dismantled down to nothing so that they could start building their temple. And then the religion B couldn't do anything because they're a minority. And eventually the whole thing got dismantled. Then the government appointed a commission to look into it, which means, you know, in India, this is a 20-year thing. So religion A will have time in the meantime to build their new temple. And then fighting broke out all over India. I was in Bombay. Shops were burned of religion B by religion A. And then religion A went out and rioted. And every house that had a religion B sounding person's name on the mailbox was set on fire. And it was going like this. So what does Buddhism say about stuff like this? And this is where Master Shantideva gets this verse. He says, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to feel if someone attacks the Dharma? Someone attacks the physical Dharma. Or somebody attacks a Buddhist temple and actually tries to smash it or harm it. Someone comes into your room and smashes an altar. The Chinese enter Tibet and destroy monasteries and temples. You know, what are you supposed to do about it? Someone does harm to a Buddha image. You know, someone throws it in the water. There's a big thing going on in India right now, you know. Buddhist A group is taking the images of Buddhist B group and throwing them on the ground and smashing on them. And then Buddhist B group is holding these big meetings in New Delhi to say that that's crazy and to put those images back up and to pray for the ones that got stamped on. And in the meantime, somebody got murdered and what are we supposed to do about things like that? Master Shantideva is quite clear. And he gives two different logics. Okay, he gives two different reasons. Who are those temples made to? Who's in a Buddha statue? You know? What is it in those holy books? You know, where is the Dharma? What are the three jewels? Aside from a fantastic bookstore on Fifth Street. Koincho Sum. Koincho is the Tibetan translation for Ratna. Sum means three. This is three Ratna, the three jewels. Okay. The Tibetans in the early translation period would make up new words to describe it. So Ratna in Sanskrit has the meaning of, it's actually of a gift, but it should be rare and it should be supreme. Should be the best and should be the hardest to get. That's a good gift. Ratna, which came to mean jewel. So the Tibetans translated it as koin chok. Koin means rare, chok means supreme. If you're studying Tibetan, it's not pronounced the way it should be. It's koin. Okay, koin chok. It's unusual, okay? It's an exception. Koin chok sum means the three jewels. We've talked about it a lot in other classes. I'll just go over it quickly. When you take refuge, which is what makes you a Buddhist in the first place, okay? If you take refuge, you're a Buddhist. Buddha jewel is mainly the Dharmakaya. The one that you take refuge in is mainly the Dharmakaya. Can you take refuge in the physical body of the Buddha? Of course. Why? Because you want to get there yourself. What's it like? In a Buddha paradise, that body is super foxy. You know, extraordinarily beautiful. Made of light, okay? Pure, totally blissful, pure bliss, pure beauty, absolute beauty. And you will get that, and that's cool to take refuge in that. What about the other physical body? The one they send to planet Earth and to other planets. Can appear as a person, can appear as a dog, can appear as a tree, can teach you Dharma in the sound of the waves at the seaside. All could be emanations of the Buddha, no problem. They love to do that. It would be wonderful to have a body like that. You know, it'd be wonderful to be able to show up anywhere as anything, whatever anybody wants. And that's, of course, a very important thing to take refuge in. But mainly, it's the mind state of a Buddha. Knows all things. Loves all creatures with an infinite kind of compassion. I mean, that's what you're really going for. And the main component of that is the emptiness of that mind, which is the Dharmakaya. I mean, that's the main component of the Dharmakaya. Okay? It's the emptiness of that mind which allows that mind to be what? A Buddha's mind. If it wasn't empty, it couldn't have been created by your own good karma. If the Buddha's mind wasn't empty, we're in trouble. Because you couldn't make it. Why? Because it would always be the way it is. What changes the mind? Why does your mind ever change? Karma. What you did in the past. If your mind wasn't empty, if it had its own innate nature of either being lousy or good, you'd be stuck with it forever. But because it's empty, you can do everything. You can become a Buddha. If the Buddha's mind wasn't empty, you couldn't become enlightened, you couldn't get the other bodies, nothing would be possible. The emptiness of the Buddha's mind is the most important part of the Buddha. Dharmakaya. Dharmakaya. That is the part of the Buddha that you meet when you see emptiness directly at the path of seeing. First time you ever meet a Buddha directly, if you're in this modern world. Okay? Dharmakaya of the Buddha. The emptiness of the Buddha's mind. Is it changing or not? The emptiness of the Buddha's mind, does it change or not? No, because it's just the fact that the mind can be anything it wants because it's not self-existent because it depends on karma. That fact never changes. That fact will never change. Okay? It's unchanging. Can the fact that the Buddha's mind is empty ever go out of existence? Can the fact that the Buddha's mind is empty ever go out of existence? No. Because the Buddha, every mind will last forever. Can the fact that this pen is empty ever disappear? Yeah, when the pen is destroyed, that fact will disappear. It will no longer be relevant. It will no longer be true. It will no longer be true that this pen is empty because the pen itself is gone. You can't describe it. You can say the pen was empty, and that fact didn't change. Okay, it doesn't change. But the fact that the pen is empty will go away when the pen is destroyed. Okay, but it never changes. It's never more empty than yesterday or less empty than yesterday. It's always absolutely 100% certified, guaranteed empty. Okay, as long as the pen exists. That doesn't change. Okay, so the Dharmakaya doesn't change. The Dharmakaya cannot be affected by any event in the universe. The fact that the Buddha's mind is empty cannot be affected by any event, any other event in the whole universe. Impossible. What can make his mind more empty or less empty or 10 degrees less empty than it was yesterday? It's impossible. It's unchanging. It's totally true, 100%. Cannot be affected by another event such as somebody saying something bad about it. Somebody attacking some physical stupa that's meant to represent that Dharmakaya. Somebody smashing, some Chinese soldier smashing a Buddha with a hammer in Tibet. Doesn't touch the Buddha at all. But Dharmakaya can't be affected by explosion of the universe. You know? Impossible. Okay? Impossible. You can't hurt the Buddha. It's impossible to hurt the Buddha jewel. Totally impossible. Totally impossible. Did you have a question? Right. That's true. No, the emptiness of the Buddha's mind. Oh, absolutely. It changes every instant. Why? No. That's one reason. And because it's aware. And as the universe changes, it changes. Okay, so the Buddha's mind is not only changing, but changes at the rate of 65 changes per second. Yeah, like changing. But the fact that that mind does not have any nature of its own, which is the emptiness of that mind, never changes. Okay? All right. Which means you can't attack it, you can't hurt it. You can go, you know, you can be in the People's Liberation Army, and you can take explosives and guns and blow up Ganden Monastery, and smash all the Buddha images there. Should you be angry at those people? No. Why? Who can hurt the Dharmakaya? You know? Dharmakaya can watch out for himself, okay? Tessie Davis doesn't have to get mad at the Chinese. Dharmakaya will take care of himself, alright? Cannot be affected. Even if you wanted to, could not be affected. Okay? What about the other two jewels? Three jewels, there are two versions. There's the real one and there's the apparent one, right? The apparent Dharma jewel is the books and the teachings like tonight. That's the Dharma jewel that seems to be, that's what we call the apparent Dharma jewel. When I say apparent, it's a Mayengak, meaning there's an implication here. What's that? It ain't the real one. When I say apparent one, you think, oh, there must be a different one that's the real one. You know, when I get up here and say, this is the apparent reason for the lousy economy, you're going to say, well, he must know the real reason for the lousy economy. Okay, when I say apparent, it means there's a different one that's the real one. What is the apparent Dharma jewel? The teachings, the books. Okay, what is the real Dharma jewel? Realizations in the mind of a human being or a Buddha. Okay, or any other being really. Okay, realizations. Specifically which one? The direct perception of emptiness. The direct perception of emptiness. The direct perception of emptiness as it has occurred in the mind streams of X number of beings in this universe. You can't hurt that. They saw emptiness. What are you going to do to that? What are you going to do to their perception of emptiness? You know? You're going to hit it with a hammer? You're going to blow it up with a bomb? You're going to roll over it with tanks? You know? You can't hurt it. You can't hurt the second jewel either. It's a realization. Once you've had it, you can't do anything to that. It's in the mind. You can't hurt that. Unless the person chooses to be upset, etc., right? But you can't hurt that perception. Once that perception has happened, you can't go and take it away from somebody. Or, you know, what are you going to do? You know, lock up all the people who have seen emptiness directly and get big vacuum cleaners and try to suck it out of them or something, you know? You can't do it. There's no such thing. Okay? What about the third jewel? Sangha jewel. Okay? What's the apparent Sangha jewel, not the real one? Anybody wearing a red suit? Okay? An ordained person. All right? Huh? Yeah, not Santa Claus. And he might be a monk, I'm not sure. There is a Mrs. Santa Claus, right? Okay. Anyone wearing this red suit, okay? Apparent Sangha, and should be respected as such, okay? But what's the real Sangha? Anyone who's seen emptiness directly. Could you hurt them? First of all, could you hurt their perception of emptiness? Probably not. Could you do them physical harm? Could you speak badly about them and affect them somehow? I don't know about the speaking, because mentally it's up to them, right? But you could do physical harm to their body. Okay, and that brings us to the second verse, and then we'll have a break, okay? And we'll drink some cold something, okay? And this is where Master Shantideva gets into the second verse. The second verse says, what should you do if someone attacks your lama? Okay, and this is a very delicate thing. So by the way, I think we covered the Chinese, okay? Should we be angry at the Chinese? Should we hate the Chinese? They did not hurt the Dharma. They did not hurt the Sangha. Okay? They destroyed images that represent the Buddha and represent the Dharma. But you don't have to worry about the Buddha. Okay? You don't have to worry about the Dharma. They can destroy things that represent them. But it doesn't hurt the Dharma. Should you just let anyone do what they want then and destroy images and temple? Don't forget, you know, I thought about it on the way back from work. What is Shantideva saying here? Did he say don't get mad at them, or did he say don't stop them? He said he's patience. It's the patience chapter. Okay. There's a distinction of being between what you should do as a bodhisattva. You know, you're under bodhisattva vows. It may be necessary to restrain people within your capacity, non-violently. Okay. It may be necessary for you to do whatever you can to prevent someone. For whose benefit mainly? Theirs, okay. It's not, you don't have to worry about the stupid's not going to go to hell or heaven anyway. You know, the stupid's just going to crumble or not. It's the person. They're going to collect very bad karma. If you can restrain them, restrain them. but never ever hate them and never ever get angry. And when they cover the bodhisattva vows, they say there's three morality vows that you can never stretch for any reason, which is the three mental ones. There's never a time when it's appropriate to get angry at anybody, period. You know, there's never an excuse to get angry, ever, never. Okay, it never helps. Okay, ever. And he's very adamant about it. Okay, so you can't get angry at Chinese for smashing stupas, all right? PLA or whatever. Okay. 5,000 monasteries, 1 million monks and nuns. I mean, it gets your heart mad, right? It gets you like, you know, and if you think about it that way, you're collecting bad deeds. Really, okay? If you hate the Chinese army, or you hate the Tibetans who participated in the destruction of the monasteries during the Red Guard, you know, a lot of the destruction was done by Tibetans who were either forced to or they went crazy and did it. What are you gonna? You know, your heart wants to get mad. You know, your heart wants to say these are really bad people. You know, we have to fight against them. You know, and like that. The anger, as we're going to talk about, is just plain pure bad karma. You know, just plain simple bad karma. You cannot hate them, okay? Cannot hate them. And don't worry, they're not hurting the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Can't be hurt, okay? Couldn't be hurt anyway, okay? Yeah, yeah. That's what. I'll do like 3 or 4 minutes on that, and then we'll stop. That's the second verse, okay? The second verse is, what do I do if someone attacks my lama? Okay? I mean, people get very personal about their lamas. You meet Tibetans, they really get personal about their lamas. You say something bad about X and X Rinpoche, you could get your house burned. Seriously. You know, it's very sensitive. I mean, those are by the stupid Tibetans, okay? And I say it publicly, you know. I mean, but even the ones who are very, have great devotion for their lamas, great love for their lamas, if you attack their lama or something like, let me do for a minute, okay? And then I'll get it. They will get very, very upset and very, very, seems angry, okay? I don't know. But Master Shantideva says, what should you do if someone attacks your lama? You know, physically or verbally or whatever, you know? And even in a group like this, if someone of the teacher gets attacked, verbally or in any other way, what should you do? Okay? And he's very clear about it. Master Shantideva is very clear about it. He says, and it doesn't read well, right, Hector? It says, as the way before. It doesn't read well in the Sanskrit, doesn't read well in the Tibetan. Doesn't read well in the English, because we had to translate it accurately. Okay? As the way before. What was the way before? And then you need Gyaltsep Jay to say, Master Shantideva already told you where these things are coming from. He spent all those pages on God, etc. Good old soul. Good old doc. Good old Shiriki Kibu. You know, he just finished telling you where it all came from. Okay? When someone attacks your lama, there's two choices really. And you can choose either one, I don't care. Traditionally, your lama is a Buddha. For you, your real heart lama, the one that you find, who's your girlfriend forever, you know, is a Buddha already. And has been trying to get you here for centuries. You know, they've been doing everything they could do to get you to this point. They've been hounding you secretly and pushing you to this point, emanating as hundreds of people to get you here. You know, emanating as the village voice that said something, you know. It's a lot of work. you know, and they finally got you to come here, you know. And this is a heart, if that's the nature of you. By the way, whether it's true or not, if you practice Buddhism correctly, they will become that for you. Truly, they will be that. Because they are empty. It depends on your karma. You want to see your lama as a regular old guy? Collect regular old karma. If you want to see your lama as an enlightened being, collect pure karma. Want to see your lama as some corrupt, lousy, stinky guy? Collect bad karma. Because he can be all three. It's not contradictory. It's no problem. He will be all three. There is no truth. There is no reality. He will become exactly what you have the virtue to see or not. Okay? He or she. Alright? So from one point of view, if your lama is already a fully enlightened Buddha, could anyone hurt them? No! Then you're saying that a Buddha has a truth of suffering. Then you're saying that the Buddha never got out of the four truths. You know, never got out of the two lousy ones. Then you're saying this guy doesn't live in a Buddha paradise. This guy does not perceive the world as a Buddha paradise. Which is to say, this guy is not a Buddha. Which is wrong. Okay? If your Lama is a Buddha, which is supposed to be the case if you have enough virtue, you don't have to worry about him, okay? Him or her. She or he will take care of himself or herself. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to defend them or start a holy war to defend your Lama, you know. They don't need it. Thanks, but no thanks. Okay? And it applies in a Dharma group, you know. If the person standing up here is any kind of real Lama, they don't need it. No thanks. I don't need it. Okay? Someone attacks me, that's fine. Love them. Take care of them. Nurture them. Help them. Be compassionate towards them. You know, don't need any holy wars, okay? I say publicly, okay, no thanks, okay? Be good to them. Never become angry, you know. Okay, what's the other possibility? That the Lama's just a plain old guy. Okay? And this is where Master Shantideva comes in. He says, if a Lama is a plain old guy, which is, by the way, never the case, traditionally, okay, you're never supposed to think that way, but if you choose to think that way, it's okay. Okay? If he's just a regular old guy, if he or she is just a regular old guy, then who is harming them really? Who's causing the harm to them? Their own past karma. They did the harm to them. If somebody attacks your Lama and gets away with it, you know, and they get cut, or they get hit, or they get talked about bad by somebody, concentrate, and you'll read it in the root text, concentrate on the fact that they are experiencing their own bad karma. And cool it. He says, don't get angry. He says, throw a dog. Stop getting angry. They are, just sit there, and as we said before, where do you think it came from? Did it come from soul? Did it come from God? Did it come from Dakshirikikyabu? Did it come from nothing? Did it come from Big Bang? Did it come from nothing at all? You know, no. It's coming because of their own bad karma. So watch it. Help them if you can. But don't get angry. And don't hurt anybody. Okay? That's very... So now we have the Buddhist opinion of holy wars, okay? And even holy war on the level of Dharma students not agreeing in a Dharma group, okay? You're not helping anybody by being bad. Never, ever. Or by being upset or being angry. If there's someone attacking somebody, love them. Be compassionate to them. Help them. Serve them. That's exactly what the Buddha wants, okay? The Buddha can take care of himself or herself. You don't have to worry about them. They cannot be harmed by anyone. It's impossible. Okay? Or else they're not a Buddha and Buddhas don't exist. So the whole structure of Buddhism would collapse. The whole foundation of Buddhism would collapse. Okay? So don't worry about it. And I love that. I think that's just so pure and so holy, you know, that a religion would announce that and make that. That's the policy of Buddhism, okay? And that's the policy of a little Dharma group. And it should be that way. This is Master Shantideva's first proof that we just spoke about, which is why you shouldn't get mad at people who try to destroy stupas, try to burn Dharma books, things like that. Sangye means Buddha. Sok means etc., meaning the other two of the three jewels, which is why you build a stupa, which is why you build a temple, which is why you make an altar, which is why you have a monastery, okay? La ne means to hurt them. Minga means there's no such thing. They don't have any such thing. Okay? You can't hurt the three jewels. Forget it. Okay? So there's no reason to get angry at people who are doing that. Right? Should you try to stop them? Yes. Should you commit bad karma to stop them? No. Should you ever get angry at them for any reason? No, because that's bad karma. It's never good karma. It's always bad karma. Should you feel like compassionate and try to restrain them? Yes. Should you lay your body down in front of the monastery? Maybe. Okay? If you're ready to do that. But not hurt them. And not feel anger towards them. The second thing here is the second proof. These are, by the way, these are from the root text. This is from Master Shantideva's root text. Ngame, Tsuki, Kendale, Gyurwar, Tone, Choa, Ndo. Okay. Ngama means as before. Tsulki means the way I mentioned before. Meaning, He just got through talking about where all this stuff comes from. Which is what? From where? Karma. Okay? Kendak Le means it comes from its own causes. Kendak Le means it comes from its own causes, which is karma. Okay, so when you see, by the way, this is his second argument, which specifically addresses harm done to lamas, okay, and other friends. On one point of view, you can treat them as the three jewels. They don't need your help. They don't need you to collect bad karma for their benefit. I mean, Nagarjuna, Master Nagarjuna says in his Surlekha, in the letter to a friend, he says, lamas don't need your bad deeds, you know. You don't have to commit a bad deed to help a lama. You know, I've seen places in Dharma centers, there was a problem, and some people get mad at the lama, and some other people say, come to the lama and say, don't worry, I'm on your side, you know, I'll do whatever I can to screw up these other people. And you're like, no, no, please, no, you know. This is more bad karma, you know. They don't need it. The Buddha doesn't need it. If the lama is a Buddha, which they're supposed to be, no matter what anyone does to them, it can't bother them, and it can't hurt them. You don't have to worry about it. If they're not a Buddha, which is impossible, but even if they weren't, then whatever someone's doing to them came from that lama's own past karma. So observe it and don't be angry. Do whatever you can to stop it if there's something you could do, and if not, what's the use of getting upset, right? Okay. Kendat le gyurwar, you have to read that together, okay? It goes across the line. Kendat le gyurwa means it happens from its own karmic causes. Tongne means see it. See it. Understand that. Look at that situation. The lama's getting hurt by somebody. And understand this is coming from that lama's own past deeds. Okay? Or your friend's past deeds. Which, by the way, again, is not possible, but that's another story. Trawadog means stop your anger. Stop getting mad. Just stop it. Okay, we got to move a little fast because we're a little bit late, okay? Next verse.
Contemplation 15 on not being able to bear the happiness of others. Suppose that any person derives some kind of joy from praising the qualities of another. Why, my mind, then don't you sing the praises of this person yourself and find the very same joy? The happiness of taking this joy has been admitted by all those who possess high qualities to provide an irreproachable source of happiness. It's also best for gathering others. If instead you say to yourself, but now he'll be as happy, and hope against this happiness, then you are denying wages earned and all of the like. You'll come to fail in both the seen and the unseen.
Okay, Master Shantideva, when he talks about getting mad, and he talks about the objects towards which you get mad, which were created by soul or dot, he divides those objects up, and he says the most obvious ones are things and situations that hurt you. You don't like them. Okay, but then he gives a few more. And one of his examples is, suppose you don't like somebody, and then someone else comes up and starts talking good about them. It's very uncomfortable, right? You know the feeling. You know, there's somebody at work that you don't like. And you're waiting for the whole world to wake up and see how bad they are, you know. And for some reason, the people in the company either treat them as neutral or some people even like them. And like you're waiting for confirmation. You know, I always call it waiting for confirmation. You would feel much better if everyone started to complain about this person. But some people come up and say what a great person they are because they have this and this and this good quality. And the thing that hurts the most is when they really do have that good quality. You know? But you know they have worse qualities that disqualify all those good qualities. But other people haven't recognized that yet. Okay? So what do? You know? People are coming up. This is another example of an object of anger, a potential object of anger, getting upset. Someone is coming up. And usually, sometimes it's intentional, because they know you don't like them. And sometimes it's quite innocent. The one that hurts is the innocent one, where you know they're being totally honest and truthful when they praise that other person. And you know it's true when they praise the other person. And it feels really bad, like especially if you're jealous about someone. And someone comes up and starts praising them. It really hurts. I can tell you, I'm a jealousy specialist. Okay? And Shantideva, Master Shantideva says, what should you do about it? You know, what should you do about it? He says, if you think about it, this is all little logic tricks. Master Shantideva logic tricks. Bodhisattva Charvatara logic tricks. He says, why is that person praising that person's good qualities? Because they feel good when they think about that person. You know, they think about how good that person is. They think about how nice that person is. They think about the things that person does well. And they feel happy. And now you have a choice at any given moment in your life. You can either be jealous of somebody and angry at them, or you can think about their good qualities and take some joy in those good qualities. I mean, at any given time, it's very hard to find a person who's purely evil, you know, who's 100% evil, except for that guy next to you at work, okay? But but it's very hard to find a person that is not a pretty much a 50-50 mix of good and bad, as we all are, okay? And you have a choice at any time to see the glass as half empty or half full, you know? It's just your own decision to concentrate on that person's bad qualities. Probably because you're jealous of them or something. They have plenty of very fine qualities. They have many, many good qualities. What are you going to spend your time on? Would you rather be unhappy and concentrate on their bad qualities? Or would you rather, like this other person, take joy in appreciating their good qualities? And Master Shantideva says, why waste your mental time? It's so precious and so brief in human life. Why fill it up with negative thoughts? You know, concentrate on their good qualities. Take the same joy in their good qualities that the other person is taking in their good qualities. Okay? So I'm going to give you four reasons in his argument. Okay? First one is, the short run you will feel joy. Okay? It just makes you feel better immediately to start concentrating on your enemy's good qualities. And start changing your mind. Okay? It just makes you feel better immediately. Not talking like long-term karmic results or anything like that. You start to feel better immediately because instead of your mind being full of crap, excuse me, your mind is concentrating on something sweet. Okay. Number two, this is where the text says, you know, those who have real good qualities, he's making a pun. Who's he talking about? Buddhas. Okay. Master Shantideva doesn't say Buddhas. He's making a joke here. He says, by the way, the people who have the real good qualities, meaning the enlightened beings, when they get on this subject, they say, you want to be happy yourself long term, you know, throughout your whole life. Do you want to collect the good karma to have a happy life? And I have students come to me all the time, you know, they say, I want to have lunch with you. You know, we have lunch, we go out. And they start pouring out all this depression stuff or low self-esteem stuff. And it's like, you know, it's like overwhelming. And they say, what should I do? You know, it's actually a result of karma. And if you want to fight it, one of the best ways is to concentrate on other people's good things. Is to concentrate on other people's good qualities. Rejoicing in other people's successes. Rejoicing in their good qualities. Rejoicing on everything good about other people is the primary cause for your own happiness. And what's the reverse? I mean, if you're constantly criticizing other people, focusing on their negative things, you know, you will have depression, and you will feel bad, and you will have low self-esteem. And that's where that's the karma. And he's saying, Master Shantideva, you have a choice at this point. You know, you can concentrate on what you don't like about other people, or you can concentrate on what's beautiful in other people. And if you do that, the karma of that will make you happy your whole life. Okay? And by the way, is it here? The result is that you will keep meeting better and better people, right? Because people are empty. If you go to a place, especially a Dharma center, right? And I go to a lot of them because I travel like once a month I go somewhere and teach, you know? And there's two kinds, you know? There really is two kinds. And in one kind of center, people are bickering, you know? No matter what it is, they're having a fight about it. And it's always 50-50, you know? Should we do the prayers in English or should we do the prayers in Tibetan? You know, should we study that or should we study this, you know? Should we have this Lama here or should we have this other Lama there? You know, is this person in our group nice or not nice, you know? And there's these struggles, constant struggles going on. It really turns off new people. You know what I mean? New people are coming to the Dharma, are coming to a Dharma center because they hope for some kind of peace and rest and respite from the struggles of the world, you know? And they get into the Dharma center and then, you know, 2 days later they find out that the same wars are going on in this little Dharma center that are going on at work, at home, and internationally. You know, and it's very depressing and it turns people off. The opposite is you go to centers and you know that probably there are the same tensions. You know, like people do notice that other people don't do the prayer the right way, or people do notice that other people talk too much, or people do notice that so-and-so is depressed all the time and grumpy, you know. But they don't concentrate on it. They concentrate on the positive aspects, you know. They're like, when you meet some of Lama Yeshe's students on a good day, I shouldn't say that. I mean, I don't mean it like that. What I mean is, there was a magic about Lama Yeshe's teaching, and you sense it in the feeling between the students. You know, some of the students who studied with him closely, when you're around them and they're working with each other, you feel this magic. He's been gone for 10 or 15 years or something, but you feel this magic and this joy going on between the students, and you smell it and you sense it, and it's very attractive. And I think that's why there's 80 centers and thousands of students. You know, there's this really nice feeling, and Master Shantideva says this is the supreme attitude, and this is the supreme way to bring people into the Dharma. Choke in Tibetan. Choke means no better way. There is no better way. If the students in that group are relating to each other by concentrating on each other's good qualities and focusing on the beauty of the other people, instead of on their faults, which we all have. I'm not saying we don't have faults. I'm saying you have a choice at any time to concentrate them or not to concentrate on them. And if you just concentrate on the beauty in the other people, people smell it, people pick it up, and then they get attracted, because this is Dharma. This is Dharma. And they came to Dharma Center, strangely, for Dharma, you know. So that's his third selling point. His last selling point is, if you want to think of ways to ruin your own happiness, if you want to assure that karmically you're not happy for the rest of your life, and he says seen and unseen. What's that mean? Seen means you can see it in this life. Unseen means future lives. Okay? If you want to ruin your happiness in both, just be unhappy about other people's happiness. You know, get mad when someone praises someone you don't like, and you will assure that you will have lousy karma. Very particular, special, specific, great, targeted lousy karma that will assure you that you won't be happy in the future. If you want to know the best karma to assure that you don't feel happy in your life, in this life, be upset when one of your enemies gets something he wants or she wants. Or get upset when someone praises your enemy. This is the specific karma that will assure that your own happiness is ruined in your life. Okay, and that's sort of a negative incentive, right? Okay, and those are his arguments about being unhappy about someone else's happiness. Okay, we'll go to the next one. Ready?
Contemplation 16. On taking joy in the misfortune of those you dislike, and even should your enemies become upset, how then could you feel glad about it? It's not that some kind of harm has come to him or her, all caused by your hopes and wishes. Even should the suffering you wished on them come to pass, what's there to be glad at? And if you say, it satisfies me when I see it, what could better ruin you? The iron hooks that's jabbed in us by the fisherman of afflictions is merciless, unbearable. Should it catch me, it's a certainty that the hell guards keep me captive in their hell realm cauldrons.
Four arguments why you shouldn't be glad. This is the converse, right? This is when your enemy gets something that he hates, when something bad happens to the person you don't like. Okay, now there are four arguments about that. All right, 4 points about that. This is when something happens, there's someone that you don't like, and something in their life screws up big time, and you're like, oh, that's terrible, you know? Okay? It happens at work. By the way, these things are happening every moment of your life. Don't think you didn't do these today. You did. I did. You know? Watch yourself. Be honest. You're doing this all the time, collecting tremendous bad karma. Okay? He has four arguments about it. When something bad happens to your enemy, it does not help you in one bit. Okay? It's just causing them suffering. It's not like you get extra money or something good happens to you. Okay? If you think about it, you know, your enemy gets cancer or something. It's not like suddenly your body is stronger or healthier or something like that. Okay, so nothing in it for you, really, except the, some kind of stupid happiness that they're suffering. But there's, you don't get anything out of it. I mean, it's not like you get healthy or you get happier or something like that. It doesn't happen. First argument. Second argument is kind of funny. Master Shantideva says, and you can't take credit for it anyway. Okay? All right? No reason to feel proud about it. It wasn't like your bad wishes made the thing happen to them. We, you know, what do you think you, who do you think you are? You know, you can't be proud of yourself and happy that what you wished for to happen to them happened, because even if you didn't wish for it, it would have happened anyway. So it's no big deal that you wished for it. Your wishes had absolutely no benefit to their suffering. Okay? You can't take credit for it at all. I call it nasty credit, okay? Number three. Again, karmically, in the long run, if you want to ruin your own happiness, if you want to be a, one of those people who in this life gets steadily more unhappy as they get older and older, then take joy in other people's unhappiness, you know? Rejoice in other people's problems. And that will guarantee that in this life, you are one of the people who gets more and more miserable as time goes on. You meet two kinds of people in the world. One of them, the older they get, the more miserable they get. You know, the more life seems hard and terrible, and it really is. And the other ones, they understand Dharma, practicing patience, and life is getting sweeter and sweeter. And like Trijang Rinpoche's face, if you've seen pictures of him just before he died, it's beautiful. I mean, the face is beautiful. You know, I mean, he's in great suffering. His body was sick, you know. But his face was getting more and more beautiful every day. You know, Lama Yeshe's skull fell out of the fire when they burned him, and it was like, you know, he had that goofy smile, you know. And that's the way it is. You know, you can go either way. It's up to you. But if you want to be one of those people who degenerates every year and gets more and more miserable as they get older, then be happy when your enemy gets a problem. Yeah, I didn't catch, when you think it's funny, when you see that it's, oh yeah. You, I think she's saying you often see great humor among good Tibetan lamas, you know, where they're, even when disasters happen, they're like very lighthearted and they don't take it heavy, okay? Last one, and it's the last thing that Master Shantideva mentions here, and he says, karmically, long run, next life, if you want to go to a hell realm, this is a great way to do it. You know, if you want a very effective way in your next life, thank you, to go to a hell realm, then take some joy in other people's problems. Very effective way to go to hell. Okay, next one.
Contemplation 17. How those we dislike help us in our practice. The world may be full of beggars, but finding someone to do me harm is truly a rare find. Since there could never be a person who hurts me any way at all if I did not them first. Suppose that without an ounce of effort you came across a treasure chest hidden in your house. You should thus feel grateful for your enemies who aid you in your bodhisattva practices. Since he and I both bring it about, it's fitting that from the outset itself I devote to him the final result that comes from being patient. He has, in the way described, provided something for me to be patient about.
This was a weird section, and when I first read this text, I thought, this is one of those Dharma arguments that doesn't make sense, you know? And it was arguing that you should be happy when you meet someone who makes you angry, because these are very rare. And I was thinking, not so rare to me. I mean, I got plenty of them, you know. and then Master Shantideva says, better than homeless people, you know. Poor people you can find everywhere. But people who make you angry, people who push your buttons, that's a rare find, you know. You should be really happy. You should be really grateful, you know. This is a very special opportunity, you know. Chance of a lifetime. You should cherish these people. And I'm thinking, this is a stupid argument. I mean, sometimes you come across them and you're kind of feeling, you break your bodhisattva vow, right? You say, you know, this one doesn't quite make it, you know. Then I read it more carefully, and if you ever get the translation, it'll say this. And it's very interesting. They become increasingly more rare in your life if you stop getting angry. Very interesting. Karmically, they start to die out in your life. Okay? If you continue to keep your practice, if you can pull off what Master Shantideva is describing in this chapter, something very unusual will happen. This is Dharma guarantee, okay? This is really a guarantee. If you can practice even a little bit of this chapter sincerely, you will meet less bad people in your life. Very strange. Very true. You will actually start to meet fewer and fewer lousy people because your karma is wearing out and you're not making new karma because you stopped reacting. Okay, that's the whole key. That's how you kill the wheel of life. That's how you turn it off. That's how you turn the faucet off. You know, stop reacting badly. The old karma gets worn out as they scream at you and you're smiling back and you wear out the karma. So how the population of people who piss you off gets smaller and smaller as you get older. And it really happens. It really does happen. You have to try it. It's really cool. It really is cool. It just gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. The people who really cause you problems get smaller and smaller and smaller. So in that sense, Master Shantideva's verse is right on. You know, he says, if you practice these things that I'm teaching you here, homeless people you'll be able to find any time. 20 years from now, you may be able to find the same number. But people who make you angry, if you do this stuff, in 5 to 10 years or whatever, even in a year, if you practice it sincerely, you'll be looking around for them and they won't be there. There'll be fewer and fewer people. Okay. All right. They'll just get less and less. So in that sense, they're very precious. You have to take the opportunity when they're around. Okay. When you find someone to be patient at, it's like finding a gold mine in your house, he says. You know, no effort. You didn't have to go out and search New York City for this guy. He came to you, you know, and here he is, this precious opportunity who's gonna get rarer and rarer, because you're gonna stop collecting bad karma. So cherish them, treasure them. It's a wonderful opportunity. And from the first day, he says, very interesting, from the day you meet them, and from the day you realize, this is a person that I can't stand, dedicate the Buddhahood to them. Say, Mike the Buddha is you and me are partners. You know, you and me are partners. We are partners in this new business called creating Mike the Buddha, you know. You are my partner, you know. I hereby dedicate the finished result to you, you know. You and me are going to make a new Buddha on this planet. You know, you're going to provide the object to be angry at or patient at, and I'm going to be the one who's patient. So thank you, you know, and thank you for coming, you know, and thank you, please stay with me. And let's be partners in this new enterprise, you know. Really, he says, think of it that way, you know. And from the very first day that you meet this person, say, okay, you and me are going to do something, a project together. You know, you be just who you are, you know, irritating. And I'll be the Bodhisattva, and we'll work together. And we'll make Mike the Buddha, you know, and you're supposed to, from the very beginning, like, appreciate them and treasure them. Okay, seriously. I mean, Bodhisattva activity sounds insane. To a Bodhisattva, the way we live is insane, you know. So you got to take your choice. Okay, next verse.
Contemplation 18. Serve living beings as you do the enlightened ones. This is why the able ones describe the field of living beings and the field of the victorious. Many who succeeded in pleasing them were able in this way to reach the perfection of the ultimate. The qualities of an enlightened one are attained by means of living beings and the victorious Buddhas alike. Why then do you act this way, refusing to show respect for beings in the way you do for the victors?
By the way, this is homework for Tibetan track, okay? You have to do it in English if you're English track. These are the lines where Master Shantideva mentions the last point. If you stop hurting other people, then people will, there'll be fewer and fewer people in your life who are hurting you. Okay? So, ditta par nimachena. Ditta means like this. Par means to those other people. Nimachena means if you stop hurting other people. If you stop hurting other people. Gayang nipa means any hurt at all. Michedo, they won't do you anymore. Okay? So that verse, the two lines from the root text says, basically, if you stop hurting other people, there won't be anybody left to hurt you. Because you wore out all the old karma and there's no new karma. So just you'll be getting less and less arguments in your life, running into less and less bad people, and your life just gets sweeter and sweeter. If you do it in a very, very sincere way, you could reach a Buddha paradise in this life. And that's the whole point of the secret teachings. Okay? In the next verse, Master Shantideva is referring to a famous sutra. And in that sutra it says, by the way, what he's talking about is he's starting to try to give proofs why you should treat other people as well as you treat your lamas and Buddhas. Okay? Like, he's attacking people who treat other people, say other students or other or non-Buddhist people or people at your office. If you treat them any different way than you do the Dalai Lama. If you think of them in any different way than you do the Dalai Lama or Ken Rinpoche, you know. If you mentally respect them less than you respect those other people, and if in your mind you disrespect them, and you fail to serve them and to love them in the same way that you do your lama, you don't know what you're doing. Okay? You're making a big mistake. And I see this, you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes you go to this Dharma center, and everyone's like serving the lama and being sweet to the lama and fawning over the lama and treating them really nice. And then you see them interacting with their fellow students and they treat them really bad. And then you wonder what's going on here. It doesn't feel right. Something feels bad, you know. Then you go to other centers where they're treating the lama really sweetly and they're treating each other really sweetly. And then you have the feeling that these people know what they're doing, you know. But this bias or this prejudice that, oh, you know, we have to treat the lama really nice, but I can abuse all my other students and my other people here is really wrong. And Master Shantideva attacks that attitude specifically. He says, don't in your mind discriminate in the way you behave. You have to respect everyone. If they're an enlightened being, or if they're a person you like, or if they're a person in your Dharma center that you don't like, you still have to respect them all the same, treat them all the same, love them all the same, serve them all the same. And if you don't, you're probably just being hypocritical. And my experience is that sooner or later those people start abusing the Lama also. You know what I mean? If they're being discriminating in that sense, they end up treating the Lama bad also. You know, if they have a true respect and love for all the other people there and for people in general, and they treat them the same way they would actually treat their teacher, it's a very good sign. It's a very sweet sign. And this is the quotation that Master Shantideva uses. Who spoke the quotation? It's a sutra. Spoken by the Buddha, okay? Do Lei, that sutra says, Semchengi Shing. Semchengi Shing means the field of living beings. Field means, sometimes we refer to people as a field because if you do good deeds towards them, it's like planting good seeds in that dirt. So sometimes people are called a fertile field. And if you do good towards them, you're planting what? Your own enlightenment. Okay? You're planting your enlightenment in other people. You need other people to plant your enlightenment in. Okay? Shing ni Sangegi Shing. Sangegi Shing means is the field of Buddhahood. Is a Buddha field. You want to find a Buddha paradise? It's other people. You want to know what a Buddha field is? It's other people. And in that sutra, it goes on to say, and if you don't respect other people the way you would respect the Buddhas, you're making a giant mistake. You are making a serious mistake. Okay? And why are people called a field? Because they produce Buddhahood. Okay? You get Buddhahood by acting the right way towards other people. 8 verses, anybody know the first line? Dagni Semjen Tamje La Yishin Nobu Lefa Be Duncho Dube Sambe Daki Chepa Zimbasho, which means, please bless me that I can realize that other people are more precious than a wish-giving jewel. Okay? If you have a wish-giving jewel, it's like Aladdin's lamp. You can get anything you want, you know, like a Cadillac, a new house, World Trade Center, whatever you like. Okay? They say other people are more precious. You cannot reach Buddhahood without other people. You must interact with other people to reach Buddhahood. You cannot become enlightened unless you have around you other people, especially ones that are lousy, okay, and who try your patience. You know, that's, people ask me, why do you go to Andean? I went to Andean this week, my company. I went back to get more suffering, you know, to get screamed at by the boss. I said, why do you do that? You have enough money now. You don't have to go there anymore. I said, no, I gotta go, you know, it's great. And the boss screams at me, you know, and everything is great there. People asking me to lie and cheat. There's nice foxy ladies walking around. I need that place, you know. And I keep going back. You need other people. You need some place to relate to, you know. You need other people to develop your qualities. If you don't have them, you won't develop those qualities. You have to be around other people. And you have to be tried and tested. You need lousy situations. You need painful situations to make yourself strong. And you must respect them on that basis, you know. You have, Master Shantideva says, if I see a Dharma person who's treating the other students different than they treat the Lama, I'm very suspicious. It doesn't seem right. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. They don't understand what's going on. Why? They say, no, the Lama's a nice guy. He teaches me Buddhism. Come on, who's really teaching you Buddhism? It's all those other students who are so irritating, you know. They are teaching you Buddhism. They are giving you true Buddhism, pure Buddhism. You know, they're the ones who are going to make you enlightened as much as the Lama is. The Lama tells you how it's going to work, and then you go out and do it with those other students and with those other people. You need them, okay? If you didn't have them, you couldn't get there. Come after class and I'll answer it. Okay, one more verse. Then you can go home. Hope you're not angry at this hot room.
Contemplation 19. To serve living beings is to please the enlightened ones. Moreover, what better method could there be to repay the kindness of those who live as friends and who never fail, and help to attain to an infinite degree, than to please all living beings?
This is a very brief verse, and then we'll go home. What Master Shantideva is saying is that in many sutras, it discusses what would be the ultimate way to make offering to the Buddhas, and how could you repay the kindness of the Buddha? You know, if you're trying to think of a way to repay the kindness of a Buddha, what would be the best way to do it? And it's stated in many, many sutras. It's repeated over and over again. The best way to show gratitude for the kindness of the enlightened beings is to be good to other people, is to be good to other beings. That's what turns them on. That's what they like to see. You know, honestly, frankly, flowers are nice. Schoolboy cookies are excellent. Arizona iced tea is fine. But what really makes those beings happy, what really the offering that they're really looking for, is that you are respecting other beings and you are being kind to other beings. And this is the ultimate offering. And this is the ultimate, they call it Len Lun, which means this is the ultimate way to repay their kindness. If you want to do something to say thank you to all the enlightened beings who worked so hard for so many zillions of years to get enlightened for you, be nice to other people. Be good to other people. Respect other people as much as you would the Dalai Lama. Okay? And then you're paying them back. That's what they want. That's what they're looking for. Okay? And the other stuff too. Okay. We'll do a dedication. All right.
Vedam Guru Ratnamen.